One of the things my children noticed about me when they were growing up is that I can get deeply absorbed in what I'm doing, and I don't always pay attention to what's going on around me. My son, when he was about 3 years old, had figured this out, and he became very adept at getting my attention. He'd start with, "Mom," and then he'd go on to, "Mom," "Mom," "Mother," "Mother," "Jennifer," "Jennifer Brooks." And that's when I would notice that he was calling me. Now, I have probably learned more from failures like that about how to be fully present than from the times when I have been successful. But it's been a lifelong growing edge for me to really be fully aware of what's going on around me in the moment and be sure that I am bringing a peaceful presence into that moment, at that time and place. I think we're all called to be present from the time we start school and someone says your name and you say present or here, to all the different ways that we are in relationship. And you know, it's not so hard to be present. I mean, it doesn't require eloquent words. It doesn't require an elaborate plan. Think about dogs and cats, our companion animals. My daughter's cat always knows when she's not feeling well and snuggles up with her in that particular way that says, "I hope you feel better." No words. And every dog I've ever known has always been aware of when someone is sad or needs comfort in some way. And those dogs have always found a way to be fully present for me and for my children. This is a remarkable thing, something that we can learn from our animal companions, that it doesn't take talk. It doesn't actually take much in the way of action. It just requires the presence that says, "I'm here." And it can be so healing. I think that being present matters because it is actually the only way that we can translate the values we cherish into transformative action. Transformative action that's successful in achieving results that are consistent with our deeply cherished values. So, how are we to be present? And what do I mean when I say presence? I aspire to bring a nonviolent, centered, and grounded presence into the world, a presence of myself that is in the moment and attentive to others. One of the ways that I've learned to do this is by noticing whether or not my attention has strayed into the past or into the future. You know, those to-do lists we all have. I think they're one of the things that is most likely to keep us from being fully present because our mind is going to, what's the next thing on the list? Well, you know, this is a practical strategy for arranging our busy lives. But, you know, we've got devices now. We can put those lists on our devices or on little sticky fish papers. We don't have to keep it all in our brain and keep running it through our brain every moment of every day. So what I've been doing for years is noticing when my mind is either churning about something that happened in the past that I can no longer change, or that it's anticipating and maybe with a little bit of anxiety thinking about how to deal with whatever is next on that list, or something that's going to happen the next day or the next week. So when I find myself in these moments, I've learned to center myself with breathing. This is a form of meditation. Breathing in, breathing out and concentrating on my breathing, the feel and movement of my breath through my body. Last night I learned a new version of my meditation practice. I was here at the Interfaith Prayer Vigil sponsored by the Interfaith Association of Central Ohio. This room was filled with more than 300 people from diverse religious communities who had gathered together to be present in support of the love and the message of love that is present in all faith traditions. It was an amazing experience. And part of that experience was the meditation practice that one of the Buddhist teachers shared with us. And I want to invite you to try this with me right now. The beauty of it is that just like breathing, you can do it anytime. But for now, let's take a moment to settle in our seats and get comfortable and maybe close our eyes and begin slow, deep breathing, concentrating on the breath. Breathe in slowly and breathe out slowly. And now as you breathe in, and this is challenging, breathe in the pain and the fear and the hate that is in our world. Breathe in the suffering and the woundedness. Look at it. Acknowledge it. And then transform it in your heart. As it passes through your heart, transform it so that as you breathe out, you breathe out love and peace and healing. Let's practice that together at your own pace. We'll pause for now. That is a practice that we can engage in wherever we are, in any situation. And it is, in fact, ideal for those times when you see something on the news that hurts your heart, when someone in your family says something that makes you want to go up like a rocket. As long as you're breathing, you can practice transforming the anger and the fear and the hatred and the pain into the love and peace and healing that you can bring to the world. Whether you're driving, whether you're walking, wherever you are, this will help to bring the best presence in line with our values, the values that each one of you cherishes, into our world which so much needs a loving and healing presence from each one of us. I think there are two questions that I find myself asking once I am fully present. And one is, in this moment, who needs my attention? And the other is, in this place I find myself at this moment, what am I meant to do that expresses my highest values? My highest values. A great example of this is a story about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. He was driving on a winding country road at night with his brother in the car, and they had to go very slowly because it was very dark and the road kept curving and turning. And behind them came a car that had its brights on. And you know what that feels like. And this is a time when what we don't want to do is to go up like a rocket, but we want to try to remain calm and let that non-violent, loving presence fill our hearts. And that's what King apparently was able to do. Because eventually the car passed. And when the car passed, his brother said something I'm sure, I know I've probably said, maybe I should turn my lights on high and give that fella a taste of what it was like. A little bit of his own medicine. But King said to his brother, no, that would be an act of violence. Centered in that loving and non-violent moment, with his values right there, Martin Luther King was able to say, I'm not going to behave like that because it's not part of who I wish to be in the world. So this idea that if we remain centered and fully present, we can express our most cherished values is central to this idea. It's not just being present, but what kind of presence do we bring? So for me, that story has always been something that illustrates the kind of presence to which I aspire. And when we ask the question, in this moment, who around me needs my attention? You know, this is a magical question to ask. When we are centered, when we are aware of what's going on around us, we can see the needs of others in ways that we might not otherwise be able to see. One example from my own experience, and honestly, I'm still on the growing edge of this being present, as my son no doubt still would attest. But every time I am able to be present when I'm out in the world, sort of where I would least expect to be needed, no three-year-old saying, Jennifer Brooks, there have been these magic moments. I'll just tell you one of them. I was in an airport. My flight was delayed. I was in that, the appointment I needed to get to is I'm not going to get there on time. And then I said, wait, here I am in this moment. I breathed and I asked myself, what is there here in this moment for me to do? How am I meant to express my cherished values in this moment? And that's when I noticed this woman. She was an older woman, and I could see that she was a little distressed. And I went over and sat next to her, and it turned out, as she started talking to me, that her daughter had dropped her at the airport so that she could go on a flight to visit her sister. And it was clear that she was in the early stages of some form of dementia. She had some cognitive impairment. And it was also clear that she didn't realize that her flight had been canceled, or if she did realize it, she didn't have any idea what to do. And as we talked, she expressed the confidence that her daughter would intuit that her flight had been canceled and would come to the airport and pick her up again. I could see this might not work. So, from me, after that few minutes of listening, the only action that I needed to take to express my most cherished values was to just go to the airline gate representatives and say, I think this woman sitting over there needs some help. She doesn't know what to do about her flight being canceled, and she seems to have a little trouble thinking it through. They gathered around her, took her under their collective wings in the most beautiful possible way. That's all it took. And I've had so many experiences like that, where once I get rein in my own tendency to be somewhere else than right there, I see a need, and I'm able to respond in a way that is transformative for me and for the need of the person I finally noticed. So when we think about the larger problems of our society, the question naturally comes, well, how does this being fully present in the moment actually make a difference in the big picture? I offer you the example of the Standing Rock water protectors. They wanted the pipeline to go somewhere other than underneath their water supply and through their sacred tribal lands. And they weren't getting any success with the system. So they became water protectors by their presence at Standing Rock, interrupting the building of the pipeline. And this, in so many ways, looked absolutely hopeless. They'd lost a court case. They were being attacked by dogs and sprayed with water from fire hoses during freezing conditions. And still they were staying. And in their training for volunteers who come, there were some very simple rules. They were written on a whiteboard for everyone to see. We are protectors, not protesters. We are peaceful and prayerful, and no weapons. This was the presence they were bringing to Standing Rock. And it was galvanizing. And somehow out of this, the Army Corps of Engineers decided that it hadn't done an adequate environmental impact statement, and so it's going to do that, and it could take another couple of years. Now, we know that's not the end of the story, but that it happened at all is absolutely astonishing. And I think that the reason they were so successful wasn't merely that their cause was just. It was the kind of peaceful presence they intentionally brought to that situation. Their peaceful, persistent presence. So last night at the interfaith prayer service, with more than 300 people gathered to be together in each other's presence, it was astonishing to feel the energy in the room. And we might ask ourselves, well, will it make a difference if all of these 300 people then go out into the world and begin practicing this attentive presence? So I have two examples. One is the young man who was the attacker in the Ohio State University violence a couple of weeks ago. This was a Somali man who had graduated with honors from Columbus State and had entered Ohio State, the first in his family to do so. And one wonders if there had been a little more attention to him, if people had noticed him in some more significant way, would it have made a difference? Would it have prevented his violent actions? Someone from OSU sent me a copy of a newspaper article, an article from the student newspaper, in the fall, at the beginning of this young man's presence at Ohio State. He was interviewed almost randomly for one of those humans at OSU stories. And he said he was worried because he felt so alone. If only people had noticed him. If only there was something that someone could have said or done or been to that young man. And lest we think that this is an imaginary solution, I offer you and encourage you to see the video created by Sandy Hook Promise, the foundation organized by the parents of the young children who were killed 3 years ago in the Sandy Hook gun attack. In this less than 3 minute video, we follow a young man, high school student, through his day. And we're meant to see, well, we know this is Sandy Hook Promise, we know it's about gun violence, we're meant to think, oh, this, we've got to watch this young man for some kind of sign of what he's about to do. But that wasn't it. And even though I tell you this, if you go and look, you won't be able to see, I imagine, every time, in every scene, there is a young man. If only someone were looking for the signs. The signs were visible of his impending violence. And this video is a short little teaching tool as part of a wider program by Sandy Hook Promise to help teach all of us how to be aware, more aware, of the signs of impending violence in people we may encounter. And maybe in the past we wouldn't have paid attention, but if we're in the moment and we're aware, maybe we can pay attention. And this group of parents, at least, believes it will make a difference. I believe it will make a difference too. And this opportunity is available to us all. So, the insistent question, what are we going to do about this or that, is not the real question. The real question is, am I fully present? The real question is, what kind of presence am I bringing into each moment of my life? The aspiration is that the presence I bring into this moment is the presence that I most long to be. The presence that fulfills my aspirations, that is an expression of my highest and most cherished values. So, in this holiday season, and in the likely difficult days and weeks ahead, may each of us be present. May each of us be the love and the peace we hope to see in the world. Our presence is essential. Namaste.